is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and thanks for being here. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association wanted to go over some things regarding our current fire situation in the area. I suppose now we're kind of into a lot of work yet to be done, but it's the more sort of grinding away at a situation.
Yeah, we're getting close to about a month into this. It's hard to believe that it's gone by already that quickly. It seems like just yesterday we were starting this whole process, but we've really turned the corner. Things are ramping down in terms of firefighting, and there's a lot of work on the ground out there taking place, removing hazard trees and some fire suppression repairs and stuff like that.
And for fire crews, I've noticed each day, I don't know about DFPA, but at least for the folks with the incident management team, the number of people assigned to the fire is dropping pretty steadily.
Exactly. So that's a good thing. When those numbers start dropping down, good things are happening for us. So as the needs for resources are no longer needed on this fire, whether they're engines, hand crews, equipment, fallers, whatever it may be, they're released, they're demobbed from this incident. And, you know, some of those are local resources. We were very engaged with the local industry community, with industrial landowners and operators and that bunch. A lot of those people are still engaged in the area, starting the salvage process for the private landowners up there. But those resources that are your traditional wildfire resources, they're made available to other fires either throughout Oregon or throughout the West. So there's still a number of fires active throughout Oregon, but also California remains really active, as well as other states throughout the western part of the country.
And while the Archie Creek fire is 91% contained, it is actually the most contained of any of the mega fires, and most of them are somewhere 50 to, I guess, the Holiday Farm fire is 80% contained now, but the other three are more around the 50% mark.
Yeah, and when you look at those fires, the Archie Creek fire is the smallest one out of those five fires over 100,000 acres. When you get up north, you have the Lion's Head fire, which is over 200,000 acres, and the Beachy Creek fire, which is 193,000 acres. So that's a huge footprint, and trying to make sure that everything's buttoned up and taken care of there is going to take a considerable amount of work. We were very lucky, going back to the help we had from all of our local cooperators with industrial landowners and the timber industry and the local fire departments and the sheriff's office and all these different groups. Unfortunately, this wasn't our first event. We've done this a couple times over the last 8 or 10 years, and we have those resources here locally available that aren't always available in other parts of the state just because of the timber industry economics and other places. So we are very fortunate to have those resources and utilize those whenever we can.
Hey, I was looking at Lion's Head Fire, 204,000 acres, Beachy Creek, 193,000. That's over 50% bigger than this fire. That's just, and I saw a Lane County picture this morning elsewhere in the media, and it's just daunting.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at our fire at 131,000 acres, that's huge. That's hundreds of miles to get around the perimeter of that fire, and then you double that. When you look at the big picture statewide, over 1 million acres have burned this summer, which is more than double what the average is. So this is a historic event, not only here locally for us, but across the entire state, where we've lost not only thousands of acres of natural resources, but entire communities and homes and the whole nine yards, and something that the state really hasn't had to deal with before.
And so it's going to be a long time moving forward here. How long is there any way to kind of forecast when the last crew member, the last person is going to be leaving the Archie Creek fire?
You know, there's going to be personnel on the Archie Creek fire for quite a while to come. So, you know, we are ramping down, like we mentioned before. Things are going in the right direction. So one thing that happened over the weekend is DFPA went out a unified command on this. And it's because of the hard work and dedication that's happened up until this point, we don't have to do as much of the, you know, fire suppression rehab projects and stuff like that that has to happen on the federal grounds. Which is one of the big reasons we're able to step back earlier. We still have personnel patrolling and doing good things out there. There's still a big presence from both our agency and the fire teams out there mopping up. You know, there's still a lot of smokes interior that a lot of those will continue till the winter rains come. But there's also still some fire suppression repair projects out there. The Forest Service and the BLM have their bear team out there, which is a team that looks at, you know, different things on the public lands for soil stabilization and you know, all those different things other than just wildfire suppression and repair. They look at, you know, runoff and the potential for slides and all that different stuff. So there's going to be personnel working on this in one way, shape, or form for quite a while to come.
Now, while DFPA has taken over the private land side, we've got the incident management team transitioning actually from one group to another. And along the way, I think maybe Friday, they picked up the Thielson fire as well. So kind of a shift for them, a shift for everybody involved.
Yeah, so again, you know, we were able to make that, remove ourselves from that because of the good work that those teams had done and the firefighters on the ground. We felt that we were at the point where basically the private lands were at a patrol status, a little bit of mop-up, a little bit of fire suppression repair, but more so it's just patrolling to make sure everything's staying where it needs to. We've had no problems with the containment of the fire for quite some time now, but we still have 8 or 10 engines out there and a crew and some equipment working on the fire, continuing to mop up and patrol. And we are working very closely right now with the red team, the Southern Area Red Incident Management Team. They'll be transitioning tomorrow to Northwest Team 12. So they're going to continue to do the good work on the public lands that the red team's done for the last, they've been here 3 or 4 weeks now.
Now, what about now that you've taken over the private lands, were DFPA crews involved before that working with the incident management team? I mean, did you have just as many firefighters out there or maybe more?
So these teams are brought in for, you know, the large picture. So there's still stuff that has to happen outside of this fire incident. You know, we still had fires, new fires we were responding to and everything else. So, yeah, we had people that were tied in with the fire team. We had a number of people assigned to this incident just because of the lack of resources and that kind of middle management that's needed out on the fire line. But we still had quite a bit of our resources that stayed back for initial attack of new fires. And that's why those teams, again, are brought in, is to manage that fire situation. But it is key having, you know, certain personnel tied in to help them because, you know, a lot of this red team is from the south, the southern part of the U.S. So they're not familiar with, you know, our landscape, our geographic areas, and all those different things. So, you know, they bring that structure, but they still need that local knowledge to help them out.
Well, and I imagine they do have trees back there, I suppose, but I'm kidding. But I mean, even that, you have different types of trees that are more dominant in different parts of the country. They react differently to fire. There's things like that to factor in.
Exactly. And we deal with that when we take fire assignments to other places as well. As, you know, we're really good at what we do here and we're pretty good at what we do other places, but you don't have those local factors. So, you know, until you work around that area, you know, quite a bit, those fuels are going to behave differently. You know, I remember going to Alaska and looking at different places where I was fighting fire up there, thinking there's no way this is going to burn. This is a swamp, and the fire just ripped through some of those places. And it was really just those local fuels and the conditions and knowing those weather patterns and everything else makes a big difference.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. Back with Kyle Reed in a moment. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com. Inside Douglas County at 1245 from News Radio 1240 KQEN. by Douglas County. 1247, Lars Larson coming up at 1. We'll continue to follow, apparently, the president's exit from Walter Reed in just under 3 hours. We'll have coverage of that from Fox News Radio as events evolve this afternoon. We're still working on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. Wednesday, Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools, K-3, back in for RPS. We'll talk about that. Kyle Reed, Fire Prevention Officer from the Douglas Forest Protective Association. You mentioned the incident management team, the red team that's been leading the effort, being based back east. Do you know where some of the other firefighters have come from that are out on this fire?
Yeah, so there's been quite a few people from, you know, Oregon, Washington, that's been down here. You know, we've got some ties with another association that's similar to DFPA. There's two of them in Idaho, and we were able to pull a couple of those people from there as well. But really, when you ultimately look, there's been people from all over the country that's come out to help, as well as personnel brought down from Canada, too.
And I know that, they're housed at different motels around the area. That's kept things busy there. And folks have talked about bumping into some of them, you know, restaurants and things like that when they've got a little bit of off time. For folks that have been on this fire, though, what's a typical schedule? And I know typical may not even be the best word.
Yeah, so things are winding back now. So, you know, earlier in the fire, you know, you'd have your operational briefing at 6 o'clock in the morning and get out and start your day. And your day would be, you know, 12 to 16 hours, depending on where they kind of were at the fire and what their needs were. And, you know, now that things are winding down and scaling back, you know, those hours are starting to shrink now, you know, trying to give some people an opportunity to catch up on rest and get a few extra hours of sleep. And, you know, this is the dangerous part of the fire where the adrenaline and the excitement's gone, but there's still a lot of work to do. And, you know, historically, when you look at, you know, fire accidents and fatalities, they typically happen in this section of the fire when you're in a mop-up patrol status and people kind of let their guard down. So, you know, that's one of the big things when we get to this time of a fire situation, is making sure safety is still a high priority with the firefighters, that their head's still in it. You know, give them a little extra break, or, you know, a few extra hours of sleep overnight to make sure that they are working safe and being safe.
Now, looking ahead, we've got a slight chance of showers starting on Thursday night, really moving in more by Friday night, and rain expected for the weekend. What are you seeing in terms of the forecast information DFPA gets about where we're headed, both precipitation and temperature wise?
So this morning, the meteorologist was fairly confident in the precipitation for the weekend. You know, he was, you know, looking at the higher terrains over both the Archie Creek and the Thielson Fire, and was expecting to get, you know, 1 to 2 inches over some of those areas, which would be awesome if we did. You know, kind of you know, in the short term, though, looking out kind of that 10 to 14 day period, things do look like they may be trending a little cooler and on the wetter side. But again, when you get out beyond there, and again, it's really hard to forecast, you know, for a month out or several months out, you know, things are looking like you're going to still be on the warmer side. Precipitation, their forecasts aren't quite as dialed in. We're kind of in that equal chance for our area for precipitation. When you get to the north of us, it looks like they may see above normal precipitation up in those areas, but time will tell and we'll see.
Now, if the rain comes in, one of the issues, though, as was talked about early on in the midst of things, is too much rain in a short period of time and the impact that can have on all the unstable land.
Yeah, exactly. That's a huge concern. You know, when you look at the fires throughout the past up the, you know, Highway 138 corridor there, they've always had a problem with slides and rocks and logs and all that stuff come down off and on all winter long, especially when you get those really heavy rains. So that's something I know that, you know, we're keeping an eye on, and ODOT is also keeping an eye on. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the fire personnel still out there. We still have quite a few people from ODOT and the power companies and all those other different agencies that continue to work on this fire on a day-by-day basis, trying to bring some normalcy back to the area.
And I presume that they're still pulling trees off the side of the highway up there, too.
Yep, so there's still some hazard tree removal that's taking place up that way, as well as just, you know, clean up some of that slash debris from those tree removal processes that have already taken place. So some of that's, you know, along the highway corridor there is being loaded up and moved down to other locations where it will be treated later. Some of that stuff, you know, the logs are either being decked up or for other projects or sent to the mill. So there's a lot of good things that are happening there to make that highway corridor safe again.
And are we still looking at the pilot car starting in about the same area?
You know, to be honest, I haven't been up there for several days now. I know they're still running pilot cars through there. I'm just not sure where they're starting and stopping those at right now.
I know, looking at trip check this morning, and I wish I could remember exactly the mileage scenario, but there were several miles in there that they said that was going to be likely. Maybe it's not quite as much or as much of the day, but a lot of that effort is still going on. Over the weekend, saw a number of people posting who, now that things had kind of quieted down a little bit, figured they could just, you know, take a drive up, stay on the highway, and everybody is just heartbroken with what they're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same from the fire community as well. For all of us that grew up in the area and knew the North Umpqua for what it was, it's hard to see that. And, you know, things are getting closer and safer for people to drive through the highway there. But please remember that, you know, all those side spurs that lead into the fire area remain closed. We had a problem over the weekend where we had to escort some people who got lost inside the fire area back out. So whenever those situations happen, we're diverting resources from doing their work and the work that needs to be done to other problems. So please stay out of that fire area. And that's probably going to be in place for the foreseeable future as all the different, you know, industrial landowners are surveying their lands and working to start that salvage process. And the public agencies, the Forest Service and the BLM, are doing their surveys and figuring out what they need to do going forward as well.
And while you've got the pilot cars on 138, other areas where work is taking on, there's not normally that much of a traffic volume anyway. And so if you go out there just to gawk and look around, there could be somebody with, you know, a rig in the middle of the road trying to get a tree out or tree down or things like that. And if you're trying to find your way around, guess what? A lot of the signs are gone.
Exactly. And you know, the ODOT's worked really hard to mitigate, identify, and remove those hazard trees, but that doesn't mean there hasn't been something missed. And, you know, I haven't had a report of that for a while, but, you know, early on while they were working, they were having trees come down just kind of randomly. So as we go forward, just keep in mind that, you know, there are, you know, multiple miles of highway there where, you know, the grass is burned off and all that stuff that stabilizes those rocks and boulders, and there's a number of trees that have been burned. There is a potential for stuff to come back down on the highway. So again, please don't stop and pull off on those white spots or venture into those fire areas for your safety and ours.
And Diamond Lake Resort was able to open back up Saturday when the Forest Service pulled back some of the boundaries there. And I know a lot of people were excited to see that.
Yeah, you know, I know that's been a big topic in the cooperators meetings here on the fire for quite some time, is trying to make sure that, you know, the area around the Thielson fire was safe to open up and get the lodge back going. You know, I don't want to speak for the Forest Service, but I know there was a lot of, you know, people that understand, you know, the impacts that has on the lodge and the community, the surrounding communities, by having that area closed. So they work very hard to get that to a safe spot to open back up.
Well, a lot, you know, this is going to be, I mean, honestly, years going through different phases of this. Unlike a lot of things that could be solved in a 30-minute show, including commercials, this one is going to take a long time. And I've been fascinated by folks in the industry, people that, you know, do the kinds of things you do, who talk about how this is going to be, while things are going to green up and all of that, but this is going to be decades to get it back to the way it was just a few weeks ago.
Exactly. You know, it will all come back. It will take time. It'll take effort. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of work that goes into doing that. From a fire perspective, this is something that myself, my colleagues are going to have to deal with going forward for the rest of our career. You know, unfortunately, this is just the list of another of many fires we've seen over the last 8 or 10 years throughout our area, which is going to challenge us for many, many years to come.
Just about out of time, but what about fire danger for those of us closer around the Roseburg area here this week with temperatures being in the 80s?
Yep, so fire danger remains at moderate. So the shutdown times for mowing, chainsaw use, and those kind of activities before 1 p.m. or after 8 o'clock at night.
Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
1258, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.